This is the Breaker.News podcast for May 6th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature, Watching City Hall with City Hall Watch's Randy Helton, and The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did TransLink game the system? Metro Vancouver's public transit monopoly lost the 2015 plebiscite on its $7 billion expansion plan. 62% of voters did not trust TransLink with their money, so the 0.5% extra sales tax was denied. TransLink doubled down and found other ways to get the billions out of your pockets. The Trudeau Liberals opened the purse strings, the Horgan NDP followed. The Vision Vancouver City Hall helped massage the public into compliance by gently removing parking meters and replacing them with bike rental stations across the city. It replaced free parking with meters in the West End. And it let tower builders and Hollywood North production crews have as much space as they want on downtown sidewalks and streets. The result? Gridlock. TransLink finally revealed on April 30th that the Broadway subway will cost $2.83 billion and the Surrey-Newton-Guildford LRT $1.65 billion. Add it up, and that's $1.5 billion more than the numbers voters had in 2015. It wants Metro Vancouverites to pay more for gas taxes, more for property taxes, and more for parking taxes to help TransLink expand. More money out of your pocket and into the pockets of TransLink and their building partners like SNC-Lavalin. Nobody is speaking out for taxpayers. The 2015 No Campaign leader Jordan Bateman left the Canadian Taxpayers Federation to join the non-union construction lobby, which wants a piece of the action. Mayors are scheduled to rubber stamp the plan at the end of June. And did I mention that about half of those mayors aren't running for re-election? So they will not be around to be held accountable for their decision? What do you think? Email me, bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First stop, Yonhap News Agency reports, Korea's team up at Table Tennis Worlds. Further friendship in the wake of the Pyeongchang Olympics and the leaders' summit at the DMZ. The Korea Table Tennis Association said the two Koreas agreed to join forces during the World Team Table Tennis Championships in Sweden. They were supposed to face each other in the quarterfinals later Thursday, but have instead advanced to the semifinals without playing. This is the first joint Korean table tennis team since the 1991 World Table Tennis Championships in Chiba City, Japan, when the unified women's team, led by South Korean Olympic champion Hyun Jung-hwa and North Korean star Lee Boon-hui, won the gold medal. ITTF President Thomas Weichert proposed the joint team at the Worlds. The KTTA has also proposed a unified Korean team at this year's Asian Games in Indonesia, pending the ITTF's approval. On BigIslandNow.com, telephone scam targeting Chinese-American community. The State of Hawaii Office of Consumer Protection announces that it is warning consumers of a new telephone scam in which consumers receive calls or messages in Mandarin Chinese demanding payment in exchange for a package or requesting information to prevent punishment from the consulate. The caller then asks for bank or credit card information and instructs the consumers to transfer money to them. According to the Federal Trade Commission, the scammers appear to be calling from outside the U.S. and hoping to target ethnically Chinese people, including recent immigrants. The numbers appearing on the consumer's caller ID may appear to be coming from a real Chinese consulate number. However, scammers are spoofing or manipulating the caller ID to masquerade as representatives of the consulate. And in the South China Morning Post, Vivian Chen reports, meet Becky Lee, China's digital influencer who sold 100 Mini Coopers in 5 minutes. Fang Yimin, better known as Becky Lee, is a journalist turned fashion blogger. She counts 3 million followers on Weibo and 4.5 million on WeChat. Dubbed Mai Shen, Chinese for goddess of shopping, Lee sold 100 Mini Cooper Countryman cars within 5 minutes on her Becky's Fantasy WeChat blog last year. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. On King5.com, Michael Crow and Allison Sundell report, head tax supporters hold firm despite Amazon expansion halt in Seattle. Homeless advocates and Seattle City Council members refused to back off support for the proposed employee head tax, even though Amazon put downtown Seattle expansion projects on hold. Amazon halted plans for 2 downtown Seattle office towers in anticipation of a city council decision on the proposed employee head tax. The 2 office spaces would have housed over 7,000 new Amazon jobs. The proposed employee head tax would raise $75 million for homeless and housing services. It would impact about 3% of Seattle businesses, taxing companies based on the number of full-time employees. It also includes possible thresholds, such as exemptions for businesses with a gross revenue below $20 million. The day before Amazon's Seattle announcement, on April 30th, company executives joined Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to announce the old Canada Post complex in downtown Vancouver would be occupied by 3,000 Amazon workers by 2022. In the Indo-Canadian Voice, Ratan Mall reports, Kazmir Tiabji Sandana pleads guilty to attempted acetyl fentanyl possession. The son of former MLA Judy Tiabji, who married former BC Leader of the Opposition Gordon Wilson, pleaded guilty in a Calgary court to attempting to possess acetyl fentanyl, a less potent version of fentanyl. Tiabji Sandana will serve a 2-year less-a-day conditional sentence in BC, with the first 8 months as house arrest, the next 8 months with a curfew, and the remaining 5 months as probation. Police arrested Tiabji Sandana in a July 22, 2015 bust at his Calgary residence. Police seized 122 grams of fentanyl, worth almost $350,000. And this week, we reported in the Breaker.News these stories. Alberta's NDP government bought ads promoting the Kinder Morgan pipeline project on billboards owned by a First Nation that is protesting against the pipeline. More than half the $1.3 million campaign is to convince British Columbians to support the project. It is not yet known how much was spent on the Squamish Nation billboards. Game over for an esports bar in Vancouver and Richmond. A judge ordered Zhiheng Zhao to pay $500,000 to prospective business partners. MLGB owner Zhao fled to China after closing the locations in March. And the owner of QuickPass Master Tutorial School, a company that prepares Mandarin speakers for the UBC Real Estate License Exam, convinced a judge to ban a former worker from competing with him. Read those stories and more in the Breaker.News. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for the Big Deal feature. The countdown to local government elections across British Columbia is at 23 weeks. On this edition of the Breaker.News podcast, we turn to Randy Helton from City Hall Watch, the independent Vancouver Civic Affairs watchdog. Randy ran for Vancouver mayor in 2011 under the Neighbourhoods for a Sustainable Vancouver banner. He is an avid follower of what goes on at 12th and Cambie. The parties are trying to sort out the contenders and the pretenders, as most of the seats on city council will be up for grabs on October 20th, including the mayor's chair, as Gregor Robertson will bow out after almost a decade in office. Pollster Mario Canseco's Research Co. reported that 35% of respondents to an online survey say Green councillor Adrian Carr is a good choice for mayor. That's up 9% from April. The next closest was Vision Vancouver councillor Raymond Louis at 19% and independent Jean Swanson at 17%. None of them have thrown their hat in the ring.
What do you think of the results from this online survey by Research Co? What does it mean where we are now, and what might it mean in the months to come?
We've got to take it all with a grain of salt. We're still 4 months away from the election or more. And the actual deadline for nominations is September 14th. So there could be a lot of changes between now and then. And the survey itself is also, it's quite rough. It's 400 adults surveyed online. So it is not so much an indication of how the election is going to go, but it is very relevant because this very weekend, the District Labor Council has summoned the so-called progressive parties to get together to knock their heads together and see if they can come up with a common unity mayor candidate. So I think in that context, it's very relevant. And it is notable that Adrian Carr is number one, far ahead of the others.
And true. Half of respondents want the center left to come together and choose one candidate, a unity candidate. Adrian Carr does not quite have the support of all the center left. Vision's big labor support has always been skeptical of the Greens. What do you think that means?
In a sense, there's no solution. I think Adrian Carr has got a lot of experience and high level credibility. However, she has declared she will not run for mayor unless it's with the Green Party. However, I can't see any of the other groups accepting that. So I can't really, it looks like a stalemate to me, unfortunately. She's very dedicated to her party, and then there's just such strong partisan awareness or partisan, partisan power and politics in Vancouver. So it just looks like a bit of a stalemate to me.
Because of Gregor Robertson's nosediving popularity and because of Vision's brand being so damaged in recent years because of their connections to developers, especially the NPA, which has also a history of being connected to developers, thinks they can get back into office. Nominations have closed for the mayoral nomination race. Councillor Hector Bremner, accountability activist Glenn Chernin, ex-park board chair John Cooper, entrepreneur Ken Sim, and engineer Greg Steves are the five candidates, and it'll be decided May 29th. Who do you think can come out of this race?
Well, that's a kind of a roll of the dice as well. I did note from the Research Co. Numbers, if you look at the detailed report, a lot of these candidates, including the NPA candidates, are the response was, I don't know this person. So there's quite an uphill battle, I think, for any of them to really get popular support. Between now and September, whoever ends up being the mayoral candidate for NPA really has to do a lot of work to let the people know who he is or she. So I would think that in terms of we're looking at a 4-year term. Stakes are high because there's a lot of new faces at the regional level and in Vancouver Council. So I think for the city that the rational voters will be looking for someone that is not too extreme, somebody who can build trust and has credibility and has experience in running a large organization like the city of Vancouver government is. So in that sense, I see John Cooper having a fair amount of credibility because of his experience in business and then on the park board.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tough call as well for that one. Yeah.
Now, the Research Co. survey did isolate a couple of issues that are really top of mind. 42% of respondents said housing is a top issue. 36% said cost of living is an issue. There needs to be other changes at City Hall. It can't just be faces and names. It's got to be systemic change. What systemic changes do you think should be debated in this election campaign and should be taken forward, whatever the new council looks like, and made into law and made into policy?
Housing and cost of living are really issues that affect people in their pocketbook and in their entire, mental and physical health, having good housing. And so it's understandable that those are top of mind right now. It's kind of interesting to see poverty and government accountability rating just 4 and 5%. But these are very important underlying issues. I think I with City Hall Watch, we haven't paid too much attention to poverty, but I think that in terms of governance issues of the city, a lot of these topics that the public may not pay too much attention to are the nuts and bolts of good government. And I think if these had been handled properly in the last 20 years, the housing and cost of living and poverty issues would not have been as bad as they are now. So we have about 20 years of cleaning up to do in the way the government is run. So for governance, there's a number of things we've got in mind. One is to reduce the influence of big power brokers, the big money, especially the corporate and union donations. So with the provincial legislation now banning corporate and union donations, this is going to be a whole new game for the 2018 election, although there are still loopholes and a lot of dark money potentially in the system. But I think we need a municipal lobbyist registry so the public knows who is meeting the officials and at least has a little bit more transparency about some of the power brokers that are involved. We need really to improve the freedom of information practices. Vision Vancouver promised to do a good job on that, but from our own experience, and I'm sure yours, the city is still not doing very well in terms of information transparency. We need still better improvement on reporting of donations. There's no reporting at all of the money that goes into the party's pockets during between elections. There's also seems to be a gray zone in the money that they're receiving. If they can prove that it is not for the election, but just for running the party offices, then it looks like the sky's the limit. So that needs some attention. There were proposals in the past about an ombudsperson. I think that there's a lot of angry people who are unsatisfied with how the city's acting right now. And I think the idea of a municipal ombudsperson in the city of Vancouver would be a good idea. Procurement also needs to have better transparency in policies. Independent external election office, because at the moment it's city staff who are running the election. And we know from 2014, we had a long list of all kinds of irregularities that probably affected the outcome of the election and yet were not properly investigated. And we also need a better accountability of gifts to the elected officials. And in that case, Toronto has a very good example of a gift registry. So those are some things don't get a lot of attention, but I think they're really important and should be worked on in the next cycle of City Hall.
That was Randy Helton, a co-founder of City Hall Watch. Find out more at cityhallwatch.wordpress.com. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Corrine Lee, the operator of the Rio Theatre in East Vancouver. Corrine led a campaign to raise $500,000 in donations and find investors to help buy the $4 million building and keep the theater from becoming a condo tower. After losing the Ridge, the Capital Six, and the Dolphin to development, it's good to see one stay alive. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for May 6th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 6th, 1954, Britain's Roger Bannister became the first person to run the mile in less than 4 minutes? He did it again 3 months later in Vancouver at the 1954 British Empire Games when he beat Australia's John Landy. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. The email address is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.